Hey everyone, welcome to the Survival Show podcast. I'm David, the founder of Ultimate Survival Tips and your host for today's show. So this podcast is for anyone who wants to be better prepared and thrive in their relationships, work, and life, no matter how good or bad of a situation they find themselves in. So every week, we'll bring you a conversation with an interesting person who's demonstrated exceptional skill in an area of practical survival, emergency preparedness, contingency medicine, leadership, business, or life in general, all to help you attain your fullest potential and increase your survival IQ. So today, writer, bushcraft educator, knife designer, martial artist, outdoorsman, adventurer, and my good friend Joe Flowers and I are going to discuss a wide range of interesting topics because this dude is a really interesting guy. So in a few moments, we're going to get into the importance of discipline and putting yourself in uncomfortable training situations and how this will dramatically enrich your life, expose your weaknesses, and help you grow so you can increase your essential survival skills and have a more fulfilling life. We'll talk about how to pick a fixed blade bushcrafter survival knife and how to quickly become an expert at using it. And we'll get into the different techniques and systems that Joe and I individually use to design our knives and gear. Then we'll talk about snakes, how to identify and avoid dangerous ones, and why you should learn to love snakes even if you hate them right now. We'll discuss what bushcraft is and is not, and how anyone can get into bushcraft, and why everyone should consider doing so, regardless of whether you live in a rural, suburban, or urban area. We'll also discuss Joe's most memorable jungle adventures, and we'll get into some tips and tricks you can use to increase your situational awareness and protect yourself and the ones you love in an ever more dangerous world. Then we'll let you in on Joe's upcoming new event, the Global Bushcraft Symposium, and a lot more. But before we get into this great conversation with Joe, would you please help us out by one, subscribing to this podcast and giving us an honest 5-star review wherever you listen. Two, go check out the mothership and home base for this podcast and everything else we do at ultimatesurvivaltips.com. While you're there, you can grab your free subscription to my weekly survival e-mag, where you'll get tips, tricks, periodic subscriber-only discounts on my MSK1 knife and tiny survival gear, and chances to win free survival gear, guides, kits, and maybe even an MSK1 knife. Okay, that's it. Subscribe to and review this podcast and go check out ultimatesurvivaltips.com. Thank you guys for your encouragement and support for this podcast and all that we do, from the YouTube channel to our MSK1 knife and the tiny survival gear brands. Thank you. Okay, let's get into the show. Joe Flowers, my friend. Man, it's been a long time. I mean, COVID hit. We missed some shows. I did not go to Blade Show this year. But as I mentioned in the intro, guys, Joe's one of, I'm going to put you in probably my top 10 most interesting people I've ever met.
I've met so many more interesting people than me. It's incredible.
And actually, I've probably met 3 or 4 of the other people that are in the top 10 most interesting people through you.
Ah, I see, mean, there you go.
I mean, you know, Matt Gorin, some other folks that I met in Colombia. Yeah. So, So you, Condor Knives, you're a herpetologist. You'll have to tell us what that is. Beekeeper, owner of Bushcraft Global, martial arts instructor, bushcraft outdoor skills instructor, writer, and you have a big event coming up. So maybe for people that don't know who you are or haven't been familiar with your story and your accomplishments, maybe you can give us a little bit of your backstory and then lead us right up to where you're at today.
Cool. Well, I got some new stories too to tell you, cause we haven't talked in a while, but, so I'm just a big knife dork. Like everybody else, loved knives since I was a kid, went to school, for zoology, which is study of animals, and minored in entomology, which is the study of bugs.
Okay.
Through that time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bugs. I'm just a big creepy crawly knife and Godzilla dork. And we're creepy crawlies and knives, you know, really come together as a jungle in the swamps. But yeah, went through college, got a degree in zoology. But all that time started writing. This is back, you know, when print was a lot more popular than it is now. Wrote for like 10 different magazines. Started dabbling in knife designs. And that's kind of blown up a lot more, and it's been really fun because I have no engineering degree. So I had to do what everybody else does and learn everything off of YouTube for learning AutoCAD and stuff. Yeah, David, now a lot more stuff has picked up though. I design now for Condor and Tops. Those are the original guys that I've designed for.
Right.
Also Artisan Cutlery, Work Tough, CGRB, and a few other new companies that I can't talk about until they are released. So the design work has really picked up big time. And I got to do that also. I take people down to South America to learn survival skills and bushcraft skills, which is one of my, you know, favorite things in the world, learning that from all over. Now I offer trips with indigenous tribesmen in South America under Bushcraft Global. We also are doing knife making trips. We're fixing for different film companies. Now we're putting together private trips. Hey, David.
Nice.
Military yes. stuff now.
Okay.
Got to go to a Special Forces camp down in Florida, and with a certain Green Beret group, am working on some programs to present them. However, things just kind of got very complicated very quickly this month and last month. So I was really fortunate to go talk at the symposiums and all that stuff too. There, a lot of the military's been in deserts for a while. They want to learn jungle skills, and they came to me, and I'm going to bring them to the right people if they come back from, you know, Europe.
Right, right, dude. That's amazing. And you've got, and we'll get into this a little bit later. You've actually got a bushcraft symposium coming up?
Yes. And yeah, probably one of the more important things, because the last one was in 2019. But David, there's this whole world of bushcraft and survival, hardcore mm-hmm. survival, real mm-hmm. survival from Europe that the Swedes like Lars Falt put on. Lars Falt, for instance, created the Swedish Mountain Special Forces. Internet guys, I'm butchering this up. If you look up Castrum Knives, you can find out more about Lars Falt. He taught Ray Mears. We got some of the biggest people in the world of bushcraft for real. The academics, the people who have done all the real like survival books from back in the day, like David Westcott, who started BOSS, Boulder Outdoor Survival School, and Larry Dean Olson's book, Outdoor Survival Skills, like the original guys who started experimenting with friction fire, all the way to Cody Lundin. These are just two Americans, for instance. Cody Lundin's very popular because he was on Dual Survival, but he's actually a really extremely good writer and professor, and really gives a context of survival real well. They're pulling people from all over the world to come to this Global Bushcraft Symposium in England.
Nice.
Last time it was in Canada. As far as business-wise, because I know there's sometimes a lot of questions, that changed my life for business. I have been on a roller coaster ever since then with the connections that I've made, the people, the inspiring talks, listening to other people in the same boat I am, and just really blowing my mind. Paul Kirtley is one of the head guys on it. Lisa Fenton is as well. They're both actually really well-known in the survival world, academic world. Paul Kirtley has his own podcast, has a huge school. Lisa Fenton does too, both in the UK. They were both studied and worked with Ray Mears like for a long time. Just all the heavy hitters. And I know, at least for me, you know, I don't know what I would have done with without Global Bushcraft Symposium 2019. It was the last time I got to see Morris Kahansky alive. And, you know, we got to meet some of these incredible people that have such a foundation on where people get these survival skills. And yeah, they're doing it again, 2022. They asked me to come back on the board. So I'm on the board again. I was on the board in 2019. And I'm kind of a weirdo because I don't necessarily have a school. I'm more or less like a mutt of the knife industry and the survival industry. And I've been kind of deemed a social representative of that, which is not me giving myself any sort of degree or anything. I just like to cut stuff in the bush. Who doesn't? So I'm bringing over a whole boatload of free knives as giveaways. And that's really fun too, because who doesn't want to be Oprah with a backpack full of free knives?
Nice. Nice. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that before we end this, but it's really good. It's actually part of your backstory, I think, and how you've been able to interface with really legendary people in the bushcraft survival. Kind of like years ago before we started homeschooling our kids, there were this whole cadre of people that were like sort of kind of first gen, kind of like reclaiming, like, how do you actually like homeschool your kids? I mean, you're kind of in this group where it's kind of like, hey, we almost lost these skills, but, you know, let's work on reclaiming them and bringing them into maybe more of a modern context, right?
I feel so bad for homeschoolers that were in COVID. I'm sorry. I said, I listened to everything you just said, but like the homeschoolers, like, oh, I guess nothing's changed for us. And it's just been like a quintessential change in academia and how kids learn and some of the stuff that we've lost. And the homeschoolers are like, oh, what's this? We were right all along.
Yeah.
That's just a Monday for us.
Well, you know, if you relate that to the times we live in, like, you know, the bushcrafters are going to be like, oh, you know, no big deal. Electricity, who needs it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you'd think so, but like I did just finish looking up how to get satellite internet on one of my trips now, just because it would be cool to go on Instagram in the middle of the jungle and do a live chat. I still like the technology part. I'm a pretty big geek when it goes down to the internet. Oh, it's so hard to go no internet for 10 days. Gosh.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember being in the jungle. What year was that? Was that 2016?
2013, I believe. No. 2016. You're right. 2016.
Yeah, it was 2016.
Yeah.
And I remember we went into town and somebody was very kind to let, how many? There were like 15 of us total. Pile into this little office and scarf off of their dial-up internet, which actually didn't work very good anyway.
No, no internet ever works as good as the U.S. As far as I know. Well, it just depends. I mean,
yep.
I say that, and then we're going to be in this podcast, and all of a sudden their internet's going to go out. But, dude, I tell you, the trips down in South America now are so dialed in. I've gotten a lot more confident from training from different people. Be able to handle a lot more situations now. And I've got like 17 different ways people can contact each other. And they got 4G now down there. I mean, people
really,
the world changes. Oh yeah.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I remember being in my hammock in the jungle and at the base camp. And when the wind blew just right and the humidity was just right, I could get a text out.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, so for everybody wondering what the heck is going on, when you have, I got this explained by a Verizon guy, you've got a tower, right? And all your special cellular signals are going to that tower. Well, when it's in a congested area, the tower has to focus its signals more or less on that area. So say Leticia, but like at 11 o'clock at night or 12 o'clock when everybody's asleep, the signal can spread out. So I can have and send pictures much better at nighttime in like at Tanamboka, the property where they found, you know, new frogs and stuff to science, at like 1 o'clock in the morning, I send all my busy workout to, you know, my wife, which is just basically selfies of me like sniffing flowers or something, let's be honest. And that's one of the things. And that's actually, you know, that's a skill that you're used, just like bushcraft and survival. You're using a skill set to adapt to any situation. I see that here when I'm in the mountains on some of my U.S. Expeditions that I'm now leading. I can tell people, oh, okay, you know, it's just the same thing. It works everywhere. It signals.
Yep. It's good. So beside the fact that I know you're high on the ADD scale.
Oh God. Yeah.
How have you, how have you managed? I mean, it sounds like a lot of growth. And last time we talked, you were pretty maxed out already. Like, how have you become good at so many things? I think you probably, again, training, energy, you know, just maybe even from a general business standpoint, like how do you do it? Maybe some tips there.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, for me, especially with ADD, I mean, if you guys haven't guessed already, then I'm sorry. But using that to an advantage is very important. I think probably that's why I like the jungle so much, because, you know, there's just so much different stuff going on there. And I think it almost helps me in that aspect. But like, I always try and make sure I have foundations now for some of my projects. And I've gotten so many different side projects. I need to be careful to make sure I do a good job at each one. It's hard, David, because I know you're in the same boat, making sure that you put time in all these. But now, instead of worrying about like the dollar and all that stuff, I make sure I stay loyal to a lot of the companies like Condor. You know, I design for them, and I always will, you know, within reason, unless like an apocalypse happened or wars or God knows what. But they're my foundation, them and Tops. They're where I first started. So I try and give them, you know, the best ideas. But when I'm open to them and say, hey, I'm interested in trying to do something in powder steel, they're like, oh, okay, we can't handle that. Go for it, Joe. And they know, you know, it learns. And then, you know, there's aspects of like the different things going on in the jungle. And you do it too. I've learned to a lot more embrace asking people for help. Mm-hmm. Also hiring people to help me. Good people who know what they're doing to help me in certain projects. And it's been better. So like, you know, a lot of times it feels like when I'm on, you know, being interviewed and stuff, it's like a one man show, but it's not. Asking for help really, really works, and people are willing to work to make you better. So that's a very important aspect of it.
That's really great. I mean, the whole embracing, I have a doctor friend, Dr. Joe, he's been on the YouTube channel a few times, and he said, David, you're diagnosable ADD, but you're functional. You figured out how to deal with it. Right. But the big thing is that's huge, dude. Like building a cadre of people that you trust, who are competent, who believe in what you're doing too. Like you can't get and retain the best people if your relationships are just, purely about you. Right. So,
right.
You know, embracing help. How many knives do you actually manufacture yourself that are sold?
My own knives? None.
Yeah.
I just, right.
So it takes a whole staff of competent knife makers, craftsmen, artisans to actually put out what you prototype, right?
Right. And
as one
and
example.
Everything. Yeah. And I mean, and this is very transitional to, you know, stuff out in the jungle too. We have like a certain set of people who we know are good, who we're friends with, who, you know, you just trust. And it's building, you know, a cadre of connections, but it's also just learning to trust people, the right people, a lot more too. And that helps.
The right people.
You know,
yeah.
But the thing with all of these different, you know, projects and things too is, you got to recognize that not all of them are going to last forever, and they're cool right now. And this summer, for instance, it's been project overload. I've been running like a chicken with my head cut off. Balancing the time with your family is going to be important. And I'm trying to do that. There's no set way to do that perfectly, you know, but, you know, next summer, I'm still going to do a Bushcraft Global trip. Heck yeah. But now I'm starting to see, David, the more fun I have and the less stress with some of these projects, the 800 times more they blow up. So like, if it's like something where I'm like, all right, dude, you know, this could be a fun project. It's not something that's going to make me, you know, like tons of money way down the line. But dude, I want to try and do some Frankenstein projects with this maker. you know, I'm going to spend time on that because it interests me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, man, hey, in 2024, the Bushcraft Global Trips, you know, they're getting pretty big. They're full. I'm expanding now. I think I'm going to try and go for 15 people on this trip because we have the ability to get bigger boats now. And that's going to be the biggest. I'm probably not going to do that again. We're going to see if I have that many people actually come and all that. But I have a second in command now, a guy who's really, really well-to-do and has done a bunch of the trips. So I have confidence taking a second group out. That helps. But sometimes, David, it's hard to manage 10 people out in a jungle environment, actually more in the town of Leticia, because everybody's running around trying to take pictures. And so like for 2024, I might just say, hey, I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go down there with five herpetologists and we're just going to blow up looking for a new species of frog. And that's going to be my vacation. But I still think somebody's going to want to pay to come on that trip.
Yeah, definitely.
So dude, being able to go like, hey, I'm going to have a break, you know, this summer, that's important too.
Here's a couple of things I'm hearing from you. And this was actually a topic we talked about maybe doing, and then we decided not to do it. And we're kind of like back to it. It's not, it was,
yeah, no, this
is like the bonus content first, guys. So, one thing I hear you saying is help is important and doing everything with excellence. And just back to that, In a second, you can think about this. I'm just going to ask you, like, I'm assuming you like had a day job or have a day job, or like back in the archives of your mind, you remembering at some point working for somebody else. And I'm going to ask you, maybe I'll just ask you right now, how did you go from there to being able to do things maybe that you love more and kind of, I'm going to say, you know, this kind of like independent entrepreneurial lifestyle that you live?
Well, there is a couple of things. One, and just disclaimer, guys, we're probably not going to talk about money, but it's not making that much money. So don't think I'm like rolling in dough or anything like some of the other people who are really successful on YouTube.
Let me stop you. Do you make enough money?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And there's another
thing
too.
Do you enjoy what you're doing?
Heck to the yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
So yeah. And so there's a side rant there, but, my knee is actually the answer to that question. My knee.
Oh, I don't know the story.
Yeah. I loved martial arts, black belt, still love martial arts. In Shotokan karate, was a MMA, striking coach, a cutman, all that stuff. Even when you knew me, and, you know, five times a week, I had a dojo that I didn't own it cause it was with the wellness center. But it's my passion. Don't make a lot of money on it, but I don't have to go over overhead and try and recycle students all the time. Mm-hmm. Between that and the jungle stuff, I tore my ACL for the second time, had reconstructive surgery on it, and then was doing backflips and almost tore it for a third time. And talked to the orthopedic surgeon in 2018, and he said, Joe, you are taxing yourself like an athlete, but you don't have an athlete's body. And
too much horsepower on your joints, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of like the Ford versus Ferrari thing. But long story short, he said, bushcraft stuff or martial arts. So one of the hardest things in my life, David, was telling all the kids and the adults and stuff that I trained that I had to close down the dojo. And you know, I'd search for somebody else, cause it's the only dojo in our county. We're out in the middle of nowhere, to come up, but nobody would come up. This was just for a few months up until something weird with the virus happened and the whole world had to close down. So honestly, it was kind of a godsend, because I don't know how I would have kept up during COVID. With the influx of people moving out of big towns to small towns, a new instructor came and took over, and he wasn't bushcraft, knives, herpetology, Godzilla, 8,000, you know, interests. He was just all martial arts. And so he could put the time in that I really couldn't. But with that, I found, you know, a new vigor. I still train downstairs. I'm careful on my knee, but I actually, God forbid, haven't had any knee problems since then. So, wow, he was like kind of right. So, nice. Yeah. And, it's helped. Mm-hmm. So that's like, you know, that was a passion, right? But that was a day job that I had a responsibility, mm-hmm. that I had to make a big choice on. And I think a lot of people have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really interesting. So, I mean, it is true. There's a lot of things going on. We have a Friday morning, just kind of like an organic group of a bunch of guys that go to our church, and we just get together and talk about life, pray for each other and all that. And I know two of the guys in our small group there, they work remotely, and they're in the computer programming, cybersecurity fields. And there's so many things going on internally with these just cultural things that, you know, I won't get into any politics podcast, but these cultural things that are going on that are making them feel very uncomfortable. And, you know, and so like, they're kind of at a point where they have to fix themselves, and they're both extraordinarily talented with skills that are very marketable in other places. And, you know, it's kind of like, hey, we see the building crumbling in some places, maybe. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. a good analogy, but you need to get away from the building and you know, get somewhere. So maybe for you, just you are a listener, maybe you've been dissatisfied with your work. Maybe you've got some goals and dreams that you'd like to accomplish. Maybe you're really struggling to put together a preparedness plan or whatever, and you live in a really urban area. You know, to be honest with you, you may have to fix your location even. So I don't know if you have anything to speak to that. And then I'm just going to ask you maybe a couple of situational awareness and self-defense tips and tricks too. So go wherever you want from there.
Yeah, well, so before that, you know, entomology, study of bugs. I still absolutely love bugs, and I still absolutely love zoology and academia. I lived in a bee lab. This is in Raleigh at NC State University for a while. The bee lab was a house, and I was always around academia, and I really loved that. And I was very comfortable making not that much money, but working out in the field with bees.
Nice.
You know, I met my wife, my wonderful, amazing human who I could not do anything without. You know, I kind of knew she was the one. And then this is just an example, guys, listeners, of change and stuff. So my boss went up to Pennsylvania. I didn't want to go with them because I met this girl who I thought was my forever girl. And I had to find a different job. So with my degree, I went to a biotechnology company. And they did testing on insects for corn, which is important, guys. I'm not going to get in any sort of biotechnology route, but I was stuck in a lab, just pipetting all day long. Wow. And here
be like caging you, I would say.
It was. It was, at least, you know, mentally, I was like, all right, I'm just going to stick around here for 3 months and make bank. And then I'm going to move with my wife up to, she had a battle plan for like a life mission. And I was like, all right, I'm going to marry her, so I'm coming along for the ride. So if I would have stayed in that job, in that area, I probably would have lost my mind, honestly. The pay was great, but I can't be buried with the pay. And I didn't have kids at the time, so it's a little easier for me to say that. That's important too. You know, when you have kids, you're worried about the legacy that you have and the foundations of getting them to college or just having, you know, money for family. Let's just be honest.
It's important to consider the chapter of your life.
Yeah, and that's important.
Yeah.
So before that, you know, we didn't have kids. Moved up to the middle of nowhere and left that biotechnology job, even though I could have really worked on it and probably would have made a really good salary by now. I kept the writing on the side. It'd be hard to be a full-time writer. You have to really do stuff out, get stuff out. But then I picked up, you know, teaching martial arts on the side up where I live. And that was very fulfilling. And I still love it. And it was hard to leave that fulfilling job to make, you know, the bushcraft stuff happen. But there are these things where I just decided to pursue what I liked. And there are ways to make money with that, like such as, Joe likes bugs. Joe worked for biotechnology company. Joe made money. Joe made lots of money. Joe, not very happy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I changed that and now I'm having a better balance. So don't be afraid to make decisions that can change your life, but they don't have to be overnight decisions. I think, David, maybe some people always think, man, I have to do this or this, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Yeah.
And yeah.
It's not a binary choice. You can start, for instance, Ben Peterson, depending on when you're listening to this, it may be the podcast before or after we're going to talk about just kind of starting a side hustle, right? That's yeah. how I began
That's how I got
a couple
it.
Of our businesses, right?
Yeah, same deal. My side hustle was writing and my side hustle became yeah. designing. And then after 10 years and over 200 designs later and 150 with just one company, you know, which sounds like I'm bragging, but I'm not. I don't mean it to sound that way. It's just what happens after 10 years on anything that you do, whether
you
it's
do
a
one
side
at a time. You
yeah.
add them up. It's
you get better.
It's like seven
you get
or eight
better at what
a year.
You do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but you get better at what you do because you're doing it more. So all of a sudden
right,
I bet you
right.
you're way more faster at editing videos now than you used to be.
No comment on that. That's what producer right. Ben's for.
Oh yeah. Well, I bet you he's much better.
Oh,
you know, at,
oh, yeah.
at it than
yes,
he used
yes.
to be.
Yeah.
And, yep. And so like, guys, you can have these little eggs and you can take care of them and culminate them and just make sure you're having fun with them. And they may not be, you know, money makers, but if they make you happy and you do that, you know, go for it.
That's really good.
I stopped writing. This is just me personally. And I have, I do write still from time to time when it's an article that inspires me, but like, for writing, it got to the point where I felt like I had to go outside every day just mm-hmm. to take pictures. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what it was like just to go out and use one of my old crusty Moras and stuff. And now I finally like got myself back into that to figure out what I like. And you know, sometimes you have to make that decision too. So I kind of started telling people, yeah, I'm not interested in reviewing anymore. Like, what? Yeah, I'd rather go out and do it.
That's a really good point. I mean, we... This whole thing that we're doing now started from a YouTube channel, right? Years
yeah.
ago. And honestly, things changed. You know, 2016, there was a big algorithm change. It seemed like any time, even though we were well within the rules, any time we did bows and arrows or firearms reviews or anything like that, we would get slapped back. And I was getting kind of burnt out anyway, and I had some ideas for knives and gear and stuff like that. So we launched MSK1 Knife and the Tiny Survival brand eventually. And honestly, we don't do that many videos now. It's not, you know, we've got a pretty big audience. It's just, you kind of get burnt out from things, right?
So yeah, you can.
I mean, I was finding that people thought, and people probably think this with you too, like Joe's always out doing an adventure. David's yeah. always out in the woods. Like we've had interns come here and they're like, yes. And they're like 80% of our time sitting behind a computer, you know, editing a video or a podcast or something like that. And man, you know, it's a lot of work. So what I've been doing exactly the same thing. I pretty much set aside the latter end of May into June to literally, you know, it's been like an 80-20, 80% of my time has been out. We started an organic farm.
Oh, cool.
Ben and I. I'm writing a book on preparedness. And so, you know, we increased our, you know, our basically our gardens and, you know, just some preparedness things that were, you know, kind of
you
like
know,
the next
the,
step and just getting out and doing, you know, getting out and doing stuff and
dude,
doing
and
the stuff
you
that you enjoy.
That,
yeah.
When you share that, David, like you're going through like, hey guys, guess what I'm doing today? I'm mixing up the topsoil for my tomatoes. And you just like post that, you know, like it's content that creates itself from doing. And I swear to God, nowadays people like that more than they like even seeing reviews.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I probably
should do that. I should probably do that.
There's
a lot of cool stuff going on, but yeah, basically the same way, like getting back to doing the things that got you into it anyway. And the things that you enjoy now actually makes you more productive on those sit down things. Like
Yeah.
Right. Like writing an article, writing a book, you know, having to just kind of plow through, hey, I've got about three or four knives I got to do. I need to just go spend today out in the woods with my, you know, my favorite knife that I ever designed or whatever.
Right. 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 And you know, when you do that, you know, it kind of inspires you too. Like,
yep.
I'm at like, maybe it's just from designing all that, but I'm like, man, I really enjoy using other knife designs too now, just to appreciate the knife more. And it kind of gives a more of an artistic spin on knife design, but it just, I stopped caring, you know, about the trolls and all that on YouTube saying this, that, and the other. And I'm going to go appreciate knives more rather than trying, you know, like show people what, you know, this knife does. And it's gone so much. It's been cool. And when you do that, when you like show people, hey, you know, today I don't want to review this tarp. I want to go outside and till my garden, and I'm just going to do a live thing. And if you guys can just ask or say anything, go for it. And it's been fun.
Nice. I probably should do that, because ultimately, you know, that's the real stuff, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is. I mean, like, it's that whole like 6 feet for the rich guy, 6 foot for the poor guy.
Yep. Good stuff. So back to martial arts. How about a couple of tips or tricks? You know, things can get pretty scary out there for people, depending on where they live and all that. Maybe one or two tips and tricks on situational awareness or self-defense. Sure. How can people be a little bit more prepared?
Well, you know, martial arts wise, we have to be careful, because we'll sit here and waste 3 hours. I have like an unspoken rule that I never talk about martial arts to bushcraft people or survival people, because either I'll never be quiet or somebody else will never be quiet. And then another guy, I swear every single bushcrafter has like did black belt stint in something, and black belts are pretty rare. So it's kind of neat that way. But situational awareness, knowing what's going on around you, is probably one of the most important pieces of our human story and where we are today. And that can be martial arts related, where you want to be, you know, aware of where a guy's eyes are when you're getting ready to spar with them or whatever that way. Or it can just be practices that you can just start adapting, just to be more aware of what's going on in your situation, which sounds like, okay, man, I want to be careful in case somebody's mugging me. No, dude, it can be just as good being aware of the situation so you can tell your wife where she put her phone. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so there are little things, little tips that you can do to practice that. Instead of focusing on different details around you, and this is really good, especially for ADD people, that I've read, I believe in, I think the book is called Warrior Speed, I believe is where I got this tidbit from, because I don't just make this stuff up most of the time. And looking at specific objects when you're walking, like in a new situation, try and remember the color of certain spots and where things are. Mm-hmm. And that helps. You can create like a mind map. Okay. So, all right, now I know where the exits are when I'm in this theater. All right, cool. All right. That dude had a really big backpack. That's awesome. What backpack? Oh, 5.11 tactical. Cool. Okay. They got that one from, you know, here. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Now he's the only one with the big backpack in this whole group where somebody's missing a phone and everybody else is wearing swim trunks. So maybe that's a good place to look. You know, being aware of these situations around you is very important, to start appreciating the details of things. And we have that, David, in our minds. Mm-hmm. And
it's just a matter of like maybe cognizantly filing it, right?
I mean, right. Turning it on. And yep. Actually, you know, I think the Matisse, after I've developed like a much better and closer relationship with them.
Are who?
The tribes that listeners. We went down with. Yeah, the yep. Matisse is a tribe that was first contacted in 1975. Hey, I just saw Tumi on the first trip last year. The same guy with the ear missing from the with the boat motor. Mm-hmm. And got to talk to him a lot more. And nice. I got to see another one that you met, Iban or Tumi. Okay. No, I can't remember who before. But anyway, watching them walk and know where everything was in camp was really neat. And then also Gorn, talking to Gorn. Gorn, how do you always know where that stuff is? He goes, well, I start paying attention to small details and it paints a big picture. So the big stuff's obvious. I can know where the boat paddle is. But you know, now I know where that little Bluetooth speaker is, so we can go get it and listen to some cool jams. You know, that helps. And The Matisse do that too, but they're looking at leaves and they're looking at little changes in the certain way branches break, and taking the same little attention detail makes you become a good tracker out in the bush. And that same little attention to detail when you're walking, maybe in, I don't know, a sketchy area in some big city, let's say, everybody seems to pick on New York. Let's say Sacramento or something. I don't know. Not sketchy, but I'm just giving you an example. Knowing situationally a little bit more details, like, okay, there's a big white van with its engine on the other side of the street, or on my side of the street. I'm going to move over just in case and go to the other side of the street. Paying attention to those little details can help your situational awareness big time. And people don't realize that nowadays. And I'm definitely one of those who's catching myself looking at my phone and not being aware of what's going on around me. And now that I can catch myself more, I'm able to fix it. And it's helped a lot more.
That's really good.
So you can take that same situational awareness that you have from trying to find wife's phone all the way to tracking an animal, all the way to making sure you don't get mugged. And it's really important just by appreciating small details.
That's great. Yeah, Craig talks a lot about focus lock. Like your phone gives you a focus lock, and then you stop being aware of what's around you, or being so involved in a conversation that you've walked two blocks and you don't even know what's been happening around you.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other thing you were talking about was basically baseline versus disturbance. You go out in the woods and you look at a place, you know, a group of leaves on the ground that nobody's trampled on, and then you look at one closely where somebody has traversed across it, you see a big difference. But if you don't know what the baseline is, I mean, this applies in an urban situation. What's a normal situation in a group of people at a restaurant, and somebody comes in, they're looking around, they have a big backpack, they have baggy pants, you know, maybe that's something you need to be aware of. So that's all good, Joe. That's great. That's great.
And
stuff.
You don't have to be paranoid, guys, about stuff too, but it does help. You don't have to be outwardly paranoid. Like I remember situational awareness the other day, guys. Here's a fun story, and I'll try and keep it short. We were out there with doing an exchange, and the package was my two kids, and the exchange was a parking lot, and the deliverer was the in-laws. We had to pick up my kids who were at my in-laws for a few days. And Liz goes, "Oh, look at that bad guy." And I immediately like stopped what I was doing and just looked over my head. And sure enough, there was somebody in glasses and a hoodie, a black hoodie and black ski mask, or a hoodie or black COVID mask and glasses and a hoodie in a car, like, and the next thing over. And I said, "Hey, Anita, we need to wrap this up and go now." Mm-hmm. And I just made it very awkward and told everybody to get in the car and just left and said, "Anita, you need to go." And she sat there on her phone and waited forever. And so I just sat there honking and doing all this stuff. And I'm like, "Ashley, you see this over here. This is not normal." Mm-hmm. And she finally, you know, Anita kind of, oh, he said the name, sorry, whatever. The person got and left in her car, and the sketchy person got out of their car. And it turns out it was a girl going into a restaurant, and I think maybe she was really hungover or something. I don't know. But she looked like a server or somebody who was working there. So I was entirely wrong. But I used a little detail that my children picked up to avoid a possible bad situation. This person looked like they were ready to do a carjack. But they weren't. I was wrong. But, you know, just those small little details of looking around me, that one was a big blinky one. And I guess I should be a little bit embarrassed about it, but I'm not.
No, not at all. It's better to be too aware than not aware at all, right?
Oh, that's it, dude. I think so. Yeah.
So that's good. And it's really interesting, too, because that's exactly where I would have gone with situational awareness. So much can be avoided if, you know, even in some of these horrific shootings and all that have taken place, had people respond, and I don't want to second guess, but
yeah,
had there been early responses or people, some at least orange flags going up and people being aware, you know, you may not even need to go into a self-defense or a protective,
right? Saves you energy.
Right.
So, yeah. Real quick, another tip, guys, for situational awareness, we can tell you to, hey, everybody, okay, be situational aware. Done. Yay, we did it. A fun one that I like to use I read in the book is when you for hearing, when you take your chin and you put it a little bit lower and then stick it out like you're trying to shave or something, that opens up your hearing canals, depending on the person and how their ears are shaped, even up to like 10% more. And then when you
really?
Cup, yeah, then when you cup your ears with that, you can hear up to like 40% more. And the cupping the ears, of course, is a device that even mammalians use for, you know, pointing ears and stuff. And everybody's done that. But that's one thing. For the actual process of hearing, instead of focusing right around you, try and pretend that you're trying to hear far away. So let's say you're on one hill, pretend you're trying to hear beyond that hill. And then all of a sudden you start hearing a little bit more of the details in between you and that point. It doesn't like make, it's not anything magic, guys. It's not anything quantitative, but it helps you be more aware. So that's just one situational awareness for hearing. Try and listen for the hard stuff to hear. And then the louder, less obvious stuff is more obvious afterwards.
That's really excellent. Very good stuff people can do right now.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, Joe. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more about, what do you want to talk? You want to talk about knives, snakes, or bushcraft, or adventures?
We can put it all together.
All right.
So I just, it was really cool.
Because
I went to,
right?
Yeah. I went to a zoo yesterday.
That's right. I texted and you. You're like, yeah. Zoo.
right. Yeah. It was really quick. And the reason why I was trying to be so quick was one of my really close friends, he was in my wedding, one of my groomsmen, he works at the zoo. And he works behind the scenes, you know, in one of the exhibits, and, you know, gets to show me some of the stuff that
nice.
Just being a nerd can do. But he's like, yeah, Joe, you know, I need like 3 less expensive machetes for this area. And I'm like, okay, you got my attention. Why do you need machetes in the back of a sterile zoo area? And he's like, there's nothing better to chop up these little pieces of mice all the way to the large chicken with. And I need something that is soft enough that it can handle the bones and be refiled. But we get interns, and these interns beat the snot out of my blades. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, I got some back at my place. Imakasa makes some lesser quality stuff. And I have a belt sander. I can put a meteor edge on there. And I had to modify the edge for his use. I will have to modify the edge for his use for more of a choppy setup rather than like a high grind for a Scandi stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, man, we need to do some meat craft with the machetes. And then occasionally they have to clear out some of the you know, the stream side exhibits and things that they have. So it was really neat to see that whole thing together. And he personally remembers him and I were published together in a scientific journal because we found a new locality for snakes. Guys, listeners, that just means a snake was found like 100 miles further than where they thought it was. And this was a big deal in the Florida Keys. And while we were in the Keys, I was starting to write for knife magazines, and I was testing blades to review down in the Keys when we did all that. It was really cool to start from reviewing all the way to being there now and being like, yeah, man, I can get you some blades for, you know, your job in zoology. It was really, really cool. And a lot of those guys are big.
When you have passion, yeah, just want to pop in here. Another thing I'm hearing from you, when you have passion towards something and you're doing things with excellence, I think that opportunity will eventually find you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It has for me. I think I've just been really, really lucky, guys, honestly. I have to, you know, go to church and thank God about it. But I've just been very, very, very lucky. And opportunities do come for everybody. We just try and harness them more. And I think that's like a big part of bushcraft and, you know, everything with survival tips is you're using opportunities.
Yep. So, being aware of what's around you, utilizing what you have, developing your skills, challenging your mind to figure out alternative ways to do things based on what you do have, not focusing on what you don't have, all that sort of kind of stuff.
Yeah. And that it's just, it works very, very well. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of people in the outdoors are that like to do this type of stuff, get their passion, inspiration from.
And no matter how hard I tried, I was not able to climb that coconut tree or that palm tree down in the Amazon.
I still need to get better at it. As we're speaking right now, I have huge scabs on my inner biceps of both trees and a bruise from climbing it just the other day because I suck at it too. And so I just wanted to get better at it.
And so what kind of tree are you climbing? I mean, you're practicing on a tree where you're at, right? You're maybe in Florida? Are you still in
North Carolina. Yeah, I'm up here for the long run. I'm using a pine tree or whatever trees I can find. Guys, we're talking about a skill set that we learned from different tribesmen down in the jungle in a tropical region where they have to use basically vines or straps or even their belts to make something to climb up a tree. And once you get the mechanics of it, it's easier. But these guys have been doing it their whole lives. So they're like Spider-Man. They're way better than us at it. But it's cool to be able to try and be able to kind of do the crayon drawing version of it. I don't know. When we talk about excellence and doing stuff with excellence, I'm getting more comfortable where I'm at and accepting, all right, dude, no matter what, there's going to be people who are going to be able to pick this up right away, like the climbing, or who are way better craftsmen. But I'm just going to be really good at making sure people have fun trying it out. And that helps too.
That's great. So you love snakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can you convince those that do not like snakes, including my wife, why they should?
Well, you know, people seem to be afraid. We're talking with the jungle and knife stuff, and everybody thinks about the jungle being covered in snakes. I normally go down to the Everglades to photograph snakes because it's way more easy to find snakes there than it is in the jungle. I like snakes a lot because in you know, I honestly can't really tell you why I like snakes and creepy crawlies and Godzilla that much, but they're like a very alien animal a lot of people just have an aversion to. And once you figure out, you know, to get over some of these aversions, you realize, oh man, you know, they're not out there to really hurt you. And even showing people like your wife or even the Matisse, you know, who have lost God knows how many people to snake bites because, you know, they have they're very far from civilization. You know, even they start to understand. You know, once you understand something that you're afraid of, you can learn to avoid it more. And, you know, for me, I'm really obsessed with them. I am not as obsessed as some of my zoology friends, but, it's really fun to get out in the bush and look for them. And it's almost like a video game when you're trying to search and search and search and you find one and then you find a rarity and all right. And, or you see like a different variation of a snake, or you find a snake where you don't expect it. It's really fun. And when you see these beautiful creatures and you realize, what they're all about. I don't know. It's really easy to make a case for them, but, you know, I also have been been living in the Southeast most of my life. So I'm very used to people wanting to kill them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, the snake thing has been really, really cool passion of mine. And I've kind of combined it in a couple of knife designs. The Jorge, one of the designers from, Condor, was like, Joe, you like snakes, check this out. And he made like a really cool snake themed knife. And I was like, wow, we have this capability. He's like, yeah, think about a whole series. So there've been various knife and machete designs, such as the Aatrox and the Vipera, and stuff that has been out there that have the snake feel to them and snake names.
Don't you have one that's, like a dinosaur? What is it?
Yeah. The pterosaur.
The pterosaur.
You might have.
Yep.
It's my first polypropylene machete handle design, which is basically like an injectable plastic. Mm-hmm. But I've had the design since 2009. Back when I just started designing, I just designed with custom makers. Just be like, hey, man, wouldn't it be cool if we tried this? And one of them was a pterosaur. And so the Pterosaur was a couple of different makers have made it. Off the Map Custom Knives, Dogwood Custom Knives, Dan Eastland, who you know.
Yep.
He makes them. And a Fiddleback Forge for made them for a while. And so Condor was like, Joe, we want to come to you with, you know, a injectable design. I said, all right, do it at this price or I'm not going to let you, or no, I wasn't that, you know, things. I said, I would really think we should try and make the MSRP this price because that's, I'm cheap too. And so, and I really knew this design forever. And I was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to hit the ground running. And so I brought the Pterosaur to them and I've got $300, $400 knives, and I still am using this $50 orange-handled knife down in the Amazon all the dang time. I got one etched with Godzilla on it because I'm a huge nerd, but this same knife, and it comes in multiple colors. Alberto, this Yucuna tribesman, was just wailing at a log cross-grain, doing all this stuff that would make even the worst YouTube knife reviewer like cringe, and it was just a Monday for him and he was doing it with that knife, and it was really cool to see, you know, people go through and do that stuff with the with a less expensive knife out there. And so the Pterosaur is a really interesting design. It's not like groundbreaking. It's got all the bushcraft feel, point down centerline, Scandi grind, comfortable handle, and it's just been very, very popular, and I just like it because it's like the disposable knife I grab to go get stuff done, you know, and just get work done and be done with it. No, okay, this has gone through a caiman's head. This has done its work. It's not that great at being a machete, but that's why I have a machete with me, you know, and, or it's not that, it, yeah, you can baton with it, but I always have an axe with me because I just carry way too much gear. So.
And you're fit enough to do so.
Yeah. Well, also too, you know, in the situations down in the jungle, you know, we change it up. Our last three trips, David, barely any backpacking. We come to these giant lush lakes and go crazy catching peacock bass and giant fish and lots of different animals. And then we have made it in a certain area where we can go deep into the jungle and then come back to the base camp. So we can kind of get the best of like the lake life and then that. And then if you're bored, you can take the dugout canoe out and go get yourself a peacock bass, which, you know, normally costs like $5,000 to get like a peacock bass trip. But they happen to be out in the water.
Nice.
And so like we can carry more gear, a lot more gear.
That's
I'm really thinking
cool.
about bringing an inflatable duck. Like one of those giant pond ducks just to be that annoying to people on the next trip.
Hey, so since we were talking about knives, how about a couple of tips for people to pick a fixed blade bushcraft survival or utility knife? What do you look for and what do you recommend for people?
Just kind of you're like, going to hate me.
Yeah.
Because I'm going all over the place now. I used to be like, buy this knife from this company. Mm-hmm. You guys.
Maybe, just, even just general principles or forms.
No, definitely.
Or shapes. Yeah.
The biggest thing I would say, instead of saying, you know, shapes and all that stuff, get out there and start using it. Mm-hmm. Get out there and just whittle yourself sticks. Get used to using a knife. Nobody. I love this. I was talking with Ethan Becker of Becker Knives the other day. He's like, no matter how many knife guys you get together on a table, designers, knife makers, all that, nobody's going to talk crap about a Victorinox Swiss Army knife. And they're excellent steel, a good, you know, folding knife that everybody watched MacGyver when they were back in the day. Go out there, grab a Victorinox and start whittling like crazy and start forming stuff and getting good with that knife. Then buy yourself a little bit cheaper fixed blade if you want to, be it, you know, some of the different popular companies that are out there. You can pay $100 now and get some good American made fixed blades. You can pay $10 up to $50 and still with some companies find lifetime warranties. If you're doing a lot of woodwork, you know, Scandi edges are where it's at. That's a giant big bevel and you guys can Google this later. If you don't do a lot of woodwork, buy a Scandi anyway, like a cheap $10 one, and just see how much you use it when you're moving around. Because everybody's like, yeah, I got to get this one knife to do everything. And I'm so
over and that would that be now. That would be like your Mora. Your Mora, yeah, would yeah, like be a Mora. Your best choice there.
Yeah, yeah, I've got 30 Moras.
Yeah, I do too.
and yeah, who doesn't? They're a great company, and they've got really good heat treats. And there are other companies out there. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pump my companies because I'm designing for many now. But when you start working with the tool, you can give the Matisse tribe a broken piece of glass, and they can gut an eel better than you can with your like a really expensive knife that I may have on my side. And they can do so much stuff. So getting more comfortable with yourself, with the knife, I think is almost more important than the knife itself in some cases. Because when you have that skill set, you can rely on what's in your pocket or what you find in your car, you know, to make something work. And I think, you know, that way, even people, you know, who are stuck behind, and guys, I am right there with you. I've got two screens, LED, Corsair keyboard. Even people stuck behind a keyboard can go outside and get themselves some whittling time. And then when you start forming, going, gosh, this knife works really well for this part of my hand when I'm doing this, you can start picking up the blades that work well for you. And then you can be like, man, that's a really ugly blade shape, but I really like the handle on that. And you can pick it up and then go, gosh, I see, you know, the benefits of this, or this knife's too flat. This is perfect for like EDC stuff, but I'm not going to carve a trap with this one, right, for like 3 hours. But you have it on you if you need to open up an Amazon box. And you have it on you when you're like waiting in traffic and have, I don't know, a chopsticks from the Chinese food restaurant, and you want to, you know, play around in traffic, you know, right outside your thing.
Make feather sticks.
Yeah, I actually pulled that from a book, guys. That's I think one of the books is called Whittling, and it talks about the Victorinox knife. And I'm using the Victorinox knife as a base point because everybody seems to have one in their drawer. And once you become more comfortable with that foundation, you can start picking your $300 Porsche knife, or your, you know, knife made out of best car steel, or something that way. And I think having those foundations, kind of like the take home message here, is mm-hmm. just go out and actually do some stuff and challenge yourself with crafts. And that's, you know, much more fun. And I'm like the biggest hypocrite saying that too, because I'm the most horrible carver ever.
You know, that's actually the first time I ever heard anybody talk about not necessarily the features or functions or shapes of a knife, but really focus on yourself and get some skill.
There's a really cool analogy that I heard on one of my first trips. I can't remember if you met. No, you did not meet Pipe. This gentleman was a great Colombian craftsman, bushcrafter, survival guy. And he came on one of the trips and he goes, oh, it's not the bow, it's the archer. And I ooh, sat there and I was like, wow, he's right. Because there's a guy who can take a broken butcher knife and make it work better than I ever could with my expensive $300 blade, just because of trusting themselves and getting that know-how. And I think, you know, I'm focusing on that more myself now. Let's just put it that way.
Interesting. I remember there was an old, I think it was a older Christian song, one of those kind of like story songs about mm-hmm. the master taking an old beat up violin and playing it, you know, so sweetly. Like it's the master, right? It's not the
right.
It's not the tool.
And
nice tool. You know, tools are cool. Knives right. are great, but. But if you don't have any skill, it doesn't matter what knife you have.
Yeah, and using them is fun too. And for me, watching the fun other people use them. And you know, when you say excellence at stuff too, I'm not really that great at any of these, you know, little side projects I do. People can say, oh, you're a great designer and all that stuff too. And I won't dispute them on that. It's because, you know, who doesn't want to hear that? But like, it doesn't take much to put your own spin on, you know, why things work out there. So I could be like, man, this cheap, you know, knife is really, really cool. But gosh, I'd love to see, you know, this function with like more primitive looking stuff and a different package to make it really work. And instead of trying to find like the one answer and become like a black belt Schloid wood carver, you know, I'm still just having fun carving, you know, whittling sticks and stuff along that line. So when you pick up a knife, and you go out to do all this survival stuff or practice or even present, you know, things, don't think that you have to do it this way and you have to become a certain person that's perfect at it, because no matter what you do, there's always going to be a better designer like Ken Onion or Jesper Voxenis, to name like a billion. There's always going to be a better carver, like Jorge. I can't say his last name because I haven't had enough coffee, but if you go on Mora's YouTube site, he's Jorge Stevenson. His father was, or Sundqvist, William Sundqvist was his father. Swedish Carving Techniques is a book on YouTube. Mora has some of his knife grips. He's an excellent carver, but I can make some of those knife grips work now because I've learned from him. So don't try and become the best. Have fun learning with it.
That's good. You've mentioned actually a lot of books, and I've got a couple of books that are just basic whittling skills, taking you from like zero experience to some really nice proficiency. So, you know, make sure, guys, that you grab the show notes over at ultimatesurvivaltips.com and just click the podcast tab, and there's a tab there for show notes. You can print the PDFs out. So, yeah, we'll get those links in the notes, and we'll share that. So, Joe, let's talk a little bit about Bushcraft Global, the adventures, and maybe specifically just focus on what you've got going on when. So if people are interested, I think you've whet a lot of appetites for the Global Bushcraft Symposium for people that can make it. And Bushcraft Global, having done a trip, you and I need to talk. I need to hop in on one in the next year or so.
Dan's coming on his 7th.
Okay.
And now I'm going to have to start. It's getting, anyway, well, Bushcraft Global, we can go right into that.
But, yeah, go right into it. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, we got like half of the people are repeat or third time people now. It's been doing really well. Guys, Bushcraft Global is a survival vacation now. You can make it as hard as you want or as easy as you want. If you want to do a tough mudder, I can just tell Alberto, the Yukuna tribesman, to go at his normal pace when you are out there looking for different stuff to make crafts. If you want to hang out by a fire and, you know, sip coffee or whatever the entire time and whittle, you can do that. But people,
you know, I have a dream to spend a week with Alberto just making stuff.
Yep. I'll tell you about that.
Backpacks
in a second.
And stuff
there's,
like that.
There's so much stuff that's been blowing up. That's just one at this little vacation trip is a 10-day to 15-day trip is just one aspect of what Bushcraft Global has now become.
Okay.
And it's a life-changing trip, guys. Just email me about it. I know what I got now. It's I know it sounds very, very cocky, but like the tribe that I'm working with, the Matisse tribe, they're literally from one year to another changing. For instance, last year they brought pink bands, and I'm like, what are you guys doing making pink bands out of cotton? Oh, the tourists like them more. And so I had to like go talk to the guys. Hey, everybody, grab the natural stuff. And if you want to grab what you guys want, but I'm going to buy every single natural thing and tell them to stick to that. Because we like it more, and honest to God, that helps them, you know, keep some of those skills. But we've had a great relationship with them. It's gotten better. They've gotten way better at teaching now. David, they make their own knives. We bring knife blades out to the jungle, and everybody on the trip makes their own knife blade handle from the stuff out in the Amazon jungle.
Oh,
the Matisse were like, hey, we want to try and make a kuksa, which is a sipping cup. We want to try some of your bushcraft skills. And they do their own thing. So it's a great amalgam of the different skills. Plus the other tribes are there too. And they're doing a very good job. They're actually better than the Matisse at showing how to make stuff like Alberto. Or now some of the other tribes that have jumped in.
What is his tribe? Lacuna? Is it Lacuna or something?
His is Yukuna. We have Yukuna, the Huitoto Yukuna. Tribe. The okay. How many do we have now? They're going to kill me. They're not going to listen to this podcast. The Tikuna, the Makuna, the Huitoto, Matisse, Yukuna. There's a bad, really hardcore Yagwa hunter I'm going to meet on this trip for another thing called Jungle Crash. all right. So we have the Bushcraft Vacation. I can tell you guys more about that. You guys make traps. You go fishing. You go after animals, conservation-based. You do get to eat fish and other animals that we harvest, but it's life-changing. Guys that are on it have been on the cover of National Geographic, legit stuff, and working with the tribes to be as respectful to them as possible. Now Bushcraft Global is opening up a knife making class. So you go down and hang out with Gorn of Tan and Boca Knives. You make a knife for 3 days underneath his house in his forge, 3 or 5 days, depending on when Gorn rebuilds his forge, because he just had another hurricane or monsoon go through and screw all his stuff up.
And let me just jump in here real quick. We did do a series of videos. I think there were 6 in 2016. And, you know, I just because it's interesting, I showed the harder core part. And you were like, oh, I don't know. It's not that hard. But
we haven't gotten anybody from the video. Those 6 videos, not one person has come, but everybody has come when we did the, hey, guys, guess what? If you want to have an extreme but chill adventure, come on down. And that's actually been a lot better because everybody's just like, Joe, this has changed my life. I don't know this what I'm going to do. Not coming back.
It is actually really true.
But he got to go. We had to put him through the ringer, though. He had to do all the really hard hiking. And sometimes we have those trips.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All of the, getting stung by the traditional stuff. You guys were like, hey, David, come on here. Shoot a video of this. Anyway, but we do have a, I think we have a clip in there.
Yeah.
Of around Gorin's place. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's blown up.
That's really cool. That's fantastic, making a knife with Gorin.
Yeah. As a maker, I've really tried to help, you know, nurture him, which he doesn't need help. He's an amazing dude. You saw his house. Mm-hmm. But, you know, bring him into the market more. He's going to be doing some designs with Condor, but he's gotten much better even since then at making knives and explaining how to make them. You go down there, you make a knife with this guy in the middle of the jungle, barely any power tools. Then for 3 or 4 days in a very relaxed in area, we take you to an area of the jungle where you test out the blade. And we show you some basic bushcraft skills.
Great.
You might have to make a fishing pole or make a spear and go after fish. You'll have to clean the fish with the knife. You'll have to do a lot of the foraging stuff, which is a Monday to them, the most extreme stuff in the world to us in some instances. But so that's one thing. We've had some very, very big YouTubers come down on private trips. I'm fixing now for stuff. So 4 million subscriber YouTubers, 6 million subscriber YouTubers have come down and filmed on the property.
Nice.
I'm starting to do that a lot more myself now. We tried to have help with other people, but we realized, holy crap, we know what we're doing down there now, and we're blowing people's minds. The guys who are doing these big YouTube things are coming back again because they're like, we've never seen anything like this. And now we're getting more comfortable doing stuff. We just set up a giant bamboo pool for one YouTuber, you know, with the house and hut set up. And also, there's a big balance of this with family. You know, David, you know, I can't be out in the jungle all the time or else, you know, I could come home and wife not happy. And you know how that goes. Happy wife, happy life. So my second in command, a person who I work with, my guide, Peter, of Peter Magnum Ventures. He also goes down there and handles some of these fixing opportunities. So that's been coming up. We are putting together some new courses. Jungle, what the heck are we calling this one? Jungle Predator. It's where just 2 people go out in the jungle with the most hardcore Yagwa or other representatives of tribes. I have to go meet the people and get a sense, you know, in the tribe of who can do what. But I really trust Gordon, and he's like, you got to meet this guy. So the idea is a extreme ultralight foraging trip where we bring much less gear, go on much harder terrain, very similar to some of the terrain that you went through on your trip, and go on a foraging expedition, whether it's animals moving or plants and stuff, all within conservation base, and we're following all the rules, guys. Sorry, I'm a zoology major, it's what I do. We're doing hardcore, you know, challenge trips down there with them for like 7 days or 10 days. So you just crash through the jungle with these guys and make your huts in very, very minimal equipment, machete, mosquito net. You know, we might even not have tarps, we'll make our own tarps. That's coming up.
Nice.
Some really hardcore groups are very interested in that. A lot more stuff. Some I can and some I can't talk about, but lots of really cool opportunities that have kind of enveloped from this wonderful thing that was the very first Bushcraft Global trips.
That's awesome. Dude, so we are almost out of time. Let's just have you talk a little bit more about the Bushcraft Symposium, Bushcraft Global, how people can connect with that. And then I have one final question.
Okay. Hey, David, did you notice how I'm like pausing sometimes and letting you talk?
Yeah. And you said my name.
Isn't that weird?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm starting to learn this stuff. They don't just want, you know, a fully caffeinated Joe ranting for, you know. So, you don't learn this stuff through osmosis. There are a lot of people who are better at this than I am. And I've met them over at the symposiums. And at the 2019 symposium, as an American, it was incredible to meet and hear some of the very similar stories that I had from people all the way from Scotland and all the way from Canada, UK, Scotland, Sweden, Netherlands, everywhere, and listening to their stories. And, that was one of the big things that I gleaned from the last symposium. Mm-hmm. When you're able to get out of your bubble, it's almost, you may not even know that you wanted to be inspired more, but it was so inspiring coming back from that. And listening to Paul Kirtley's talk on the state of bushcraft in the industry and how YouTube and Instagram and all that has affected it, and how, like, all the biggest names, like I remember Paul going, all these giant names in YouTube and all that, everybody, this was an open invite thing. None of them are here. And I just, it was like, oh my God, it was such a gold mine of information to know. And I barely even gleaned it. And I was like, I have to make the symposium happen no matter where it is. I got, you know, it was just incredible. Help me, you know, put me on my path of not worrying about, you know, small stuff and just doing what I like. Because I'm seeing these other guys from these other countries do it at the symposium. And that's what I'm really excited about when I'm going to the Global Bushcraft Symposium 2022. There's going to be already this camaraderie of people who know what they got from the last symposium. And it's just incredible to see that. Plus, there's these theme camps. And each one of them is a godsend because they are from people who really know their stuff, David. Like there's a theme camp with Julia Kaltoff. Julia Kaltoff is important because she's like basically a Swedish axe. I would call her like a guru, even though she's very young. She knows a lot about the industry. She used to be the president of Wetterlings. As things change and she started her own company, where she's carving axe handles, and she's become an artist at carving handles, and she has her own carving axe, and you can take a carving handle axe class from her and learn about the ergonomics of working a tool. Inspiring. I was there at the last one in 2019, and I took this, birch bark knife sheath making class, where you're using birch bark, which you can actually pick up sometimes in front of like Burger King, because it's actually all over the US as an ornamental, and weave it into a certain a style of sheath, which I'm not that very good at, but I can do it. But I learned it from Bushcraft Danmark, Bushcraft Danmark. And I was looking at this stuff and he's like, Joe, why are you like here so much? And I'm like, I can do this in the Amazon with jungle stuff. And he's like, wow, that's really cool. And I'm like, can you know, it's like, well, I didn't invent this sheet thing. I was like, yeah, but you're the one who taught me this. And I wouldn't have thought that. At the last Global Bushcraft Symposium, I met Peter, who's now my like go-to medic and one of my fellow guides on the trips, and the person who's going to be guiding people on the trips that I can't do, just as jovial of a guy as I am. And he's someone who I trust. He's already treated me for scorpion bites. He's already put together, you know, like trips. And this was just 5 days last time, David, in Canada. And you know, I brought my Condor stuff and tops for instance, here's another thing. Les Stroud, you know, he's an acquaintance of mine. I'm not always like buddy, you know, like talking with Les, hey dude, what's up? But we've had a good relationship over the years, and he came as one of the speakers to the 2019 symposium. And I pulled Les over because we always chit chat because I'm friends with him and Helle. And I'm like, hey, dude, what do you think of these knives? Because I'm really good friends with LT, LT Wright Knives, a great American maker. And he's like, yeah, I was like, well, I'd like you to meet him because I'm a really good, he's a really good friend of mine. And I think you'd appreciate what he does. And so they now have kind of got some new big knives. It came out with a really big machete that I'm pretty fond of. And that was just one of the small little connections at the Global Bushcraft Symposium 2019. And there
that's
were so
really,
many
people. That's oh, really man. Good. Yeah.
I don't know what I would have done without it. And I know I sounds like I'm gushing, even though I'm on the board, but I'm just being honest with you guys. These are all that happened at the last one. And I've never been to England. So I'm dying to go there for this one. The sad part is, honestly, another show called the Bushcraft Show, which is like Blade Show, made it right at the same time. And I was really banking on going to both this year, but I had to, sadly, I had to choose one. So I wanted to go with the symposium because I know all the hardcore, amazing, real deal people you'll meet there. And it's not like they're unapproachable. I mean, you could walk up to Larry Dean Olson and have him or David Westcott sign, you know, their books, Morris Kahansky. You could talk with him back when he was alive for like 20 or no, it's Morris. Anybody who knows Morris will not say I'm talking smack when I say you go up there to have a 10-minute conversation. It's like 2 hours long because he's that cool. But like,
We actually had him on the podcast, right before the last one.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Hey, did I can't like remember. That, yeah. Did I help make that happen? I can't even remember.
You did. Yep.
Awesome.
You did.
I got a new hashtag. It's called It's Been Joed.
So go ahead and tell people we get out of here how they can connect with Bushcraft Global. Like you have a website, I'm assuming, and I'm assuming there's a Global Bushcraft Symposium. I'm not assuming. I actually looked it up. So tell them how to find that and how to find you.
Okay, so the Global Bushcraft Symposium 2022, if you put it in Google, it's there. You can go there. They have the different prices and different tier setups. You can see what it is, but I'm telling you, you don't know unless you go. People think it's like, oh, you can only go there if you're some austere group, you know, special forces guy. Anyone can go. Anyone can go, David. Anybody can go there. It's just, you know, some people don't want to fly to England. That's very understandable. My website is bushcraftglobal.com. You got all these words with bushcraft in them in global. It's kind of confusing, guys. Sorry. Bushcraftglobal.com. I updated it during COVID. I still need to update it again, but honestly, I'm out there cutting stuff, guys. We're getting full things. People know what I do and how to make stuff happen. So I'm not that worried about that because a lot of huge stuff has happened just with the connections I've made. And I know that sounds, you know, a little bit like I'm talking about myself too much, but it's honestly like I could sit there and worry about my website, but I'm going to go have a lot more fun showing my kids how to make a fuzz stick in a little bit. That's important too. So bushcraftglobal.com, Instagram. Nice. I finally hit 10K. I don't know what that means, but it probably means I'm going to be under a shadow ban or something. But
that's great.
Yeah. And it's awesome. Gotten better on Instagram too. You know why?
Why?
I started having fun with it. Instead of going, I have to have an ISO 200 perfect picture of a condor knife. I'm like, hey guys, check out this dead animal I found. People like it.
Right. Yeah.
So.
You got me thinking about all that, Joe, because I've kind of stepped away from a lot of social media.
Well, yeah, you do. You have to sometimes.
Yeah. But it's because I made, in some ways, I made things complicated for myself. And I had standards that were so high that, you know, it's hard to sustain that at a certain point.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a couple gear brands and you have the podcast and, you know.
Right. I mean.
You start an organic farm.
Right. And you know, I think.
But having fun is important. I got to make it fun again.
Yeah. It's the most important. Actually, I think for me, of course, because I'm super I'm just a big kid nerd. I think having fun is the most important part to get reinvigorated. And there is no answer for anybody trying to figure out how to make a business in bushcraft and all that stuff too. If you guys knew like the real finances, you could become a thousandaire. You know, there is no real answer to make it work. And if there is no real answer, Then to me, I was like, all right, I'm just going to have fun again and then go from there and make sure that I'm on the path of making sure that you're having fun with your family and making sure that you're having fun in your business too. And I think that's at least my values. That's what worked for me, but I'm insanely positive a lot of times. So that also helps.
It's really good. I was going to ask you what your final thoughts are, but let's call that your final thoughts. Cause that was great. That was perfect. Joe Flowers, my friend, it's so good to connect with you. It's been too long. Let's not take so long. Let's have you back again, maybe in a couple months, catch up.
Sure. We can do a couple weeks too, just depending on when I'm in country.
Yeah. Okay.
It's easy for me to do this as filler. So you can have a backup. So you can have some fun times during December when you're with your kids during Christmas and just put up Joe and I ranted for an hour. Here it is.
Nice. Next time I'll figure out how to do a video cast too, and we'll get that all squared away too, and then we can post it other places.
No problem.
So Joe, appreciate your time. Appreciate you. Love your energy. I know for me personally, I've got some takeaways, especially some of the things that became not fun. Just maybe making those fun again, figuring out how to make that happen. So I appreciate everything. Appreciate your wisdom. Dude, thank you so much.
Wisdom. Oh, God.
Wisdom, energy. Yeah.
I hope everybody has a collective roll of eyes when they heard that part, please. But thanks.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, everyone. Before we head out of here, I'd like you to do three things to help us out and help others learn what they need to do now before a society-altering event or disaster strikes. First, pay it forward by sharing our family-friendly content with the ones you love directly and on social media. And please go give us a 5-star rating and honest review wherever you listen to this podcast. Thank you for doing so. Second, go over to our mothership, ultimatesurvivaltips.com, and check it out. There's lots of free survival, bushcraft, and prepper content, like my weekly survival eMag newsletter. Plus, you can jump into my Tiny Survival Masterclass and grab some of my exclusive gear, like MSK1 knives, Tiny Survival, and first aid guides. And check this out. You can go over there and build your own pocket survival kit with my exclusive DIY Build a Kit app. And while you're there, don't forget to click on the podcast tab to get the show notes PDF with links to the things we discussed today. And one last thing, I've talked about this in previous podcasts, but it's not too late to add another layer of defense against a possible food crisis this year by adding a home freeze dryer to your preps. So you can start stockpiling your summer leftovers and garden produce and putting them away for up to 25 years. Just click on the freeze dryers tab at the top of our website at ultimatesurvivaltips.com to get free shipping on your own home freeze dryer and a ton of other bonuses today. Okay, everybody, I think that's about it. Thanks for joining us today. We'll see you next time on the Survival Show podcast. Until then, keep it simple, be positive, and stay sharp.